and condiments. Pop into the shop Monday through Saturday between 8 and 5 at 204 Berry Street in downtown Kingston. And don't forget to follow Old Farm Fine Foods on Instagram at OldFarmFF to get the scoop on the latest goodies. Old Farm Fine Foods, comfort food you can count on.
This episode of the Kingston Live Podcast is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Get the most out of the Kingston Grand Theater experience with access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
What does a music scene need to thrive? It's not just artists and venues. It's the interpersonal relationships and community that transform a collection of musicians into a scene. And at the core of all great music scenes is a spirit of generosity and a desire to create opportunities for those starting out, stewarding in the next generation of musicians. This is Kingston Live, and today we're speaking with a local staple who has committed himself to elevating the Kingston music scene. For over 25 years, Jay Smith has been a key figure in Kingston music. By the usual metrics, Jay, better known to many Kingstonians as Smitty, has the credentials all professional musicians are looking for. As a solo country and rock singer-songwriter, he's shared the stage with Canadian legends from Blue Rodeo and Kim Mitchell to fellow locals like Dan Aykroyd and the Tragically Hip. He's written songs that have broken into country charts, and he's played across the country and beyond.
Just promise that you'll leave a light on. Put my stick out by the door.
But ask him what he's most proud of, and he won't name stats. He'll name people. Off the stage, Smitty has supported fellow musicians and amateurs alike to take the stage and share their skills. And just under 2 years ago, he made the bold decision to open a new music venue in the heart of downtown Kingston. Opening in early 2023, The Buckle is Kingston's premier country bar, offering two fully equipped stages across two floors ready for all manner of live music, ranging from touring acts to open mics and karaoke. On top of creating a great spot to have a drink, unwind, and listen, Jay's designed The Buckle to be a hub for musicians to come together, cut their teeth, and put on great shows. Rob and Ange sit down with Jay to talk legacy and creating space for new musicians in the city.
All right. I'm Rob Howard, and I'm here with...
And Stever, hi.
And we're sitting across from Jay Smith. Some of you know Jay as Smitty.
I was like, that sounds so weird when you're like, we're sitting across from Jay Smith. Yeah.
It's even better when people call me Jason. I'm like, my mother doesn't even call me.
Whoa.
Well, this is a bit of a different podcast setup for us today because we were actually sitting here on the floor of The Buckle in downtown Kingston. Thank you very much for having us to your lovely venue. This is my first time being in here, and I'm blown away.
Oh, thank you.
It's phenomenal.
What a great spot you have here.
Oh, thanks, Ange.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate the tour and the beer, which are buckle sized.
That is the Buckle beer.
Jay, you've been a pillar of the Kingston music scene in some form or another for so long, and I want to know a bit about your backstory. How'd you come to be arguably one of the most beloved musicians in the region, and more recently one of Kingston's newest live music venue owners?
Well, I started out when I was about 14 playing. You asked maybe about the first gig, and I was trying to think in my head. Uncle Vinnie Mosier over on Wolf Island posted a video, and I was playing the drums, and I think I was 13 years old on Wolf Island playing Music Fest, and we were doing Johnny B. Good, and I was the drummer. So I think it all started, I started playing drums at 6, started playing piano at 9, started playing guitar at 10, and I started playing live for money at 14.
Wow.
And it's so 37 years I've been doing this.
Have you always wanted to own and operate your own live music venue? Was that a dream of yours? I'm assuming being a musician was, but a venue owner, when did that dream kind of hit?
Yeah, so my wife, Lauren, and I have been talking about this for 10 years now, and COVID hit. I've been back and forth to Nashville off and on for 7 years, and I was literally a pen stroke away from my publishing deal. And COVID hit, I had to come home, and I haven't been back to Nashville since. Everything just went. So I said to Lauren, this place coincidentally happened to pop open for sale. There was a restaurant here before us. Magalo's, of course, was here for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then there was a restaurant that was here for a short time during COVID. Unfortunately, they didn't pan out. It came up for sale. So I bought it. I said to Lauren, I said, if we're ever going to do it, this is the time. I said, location, key for live music. We're right next door to the Grand Theater downtown Kingston. It's got two floors, Nashville style, which I always wanted to do. I always told her that I wanted to bring back my favorite places from Nashville and bring them here because, I mean, everybody loves country music, I think, in some way or another, whether they admit it or not. And I think the biggest fallacy that people get in their head about this place is that it's a country music bar. It's just a music venue. I'm not about genre. I'm just about live music. When I was growing up, you couldn't go downtown Kingston without having live music somewhere. Like, my buddies and I were always at the Dukes, the Toucan, the Wellington when it was still here. Like, we were watching the Hip and we were watching the Mahones. We were watching the Reckoning. We were watching the Headstones and Moist and all those bands. Like, when we were kids, like, at Zorba's and all these places that you would just go, really? And I'm like, yeah. Like, my mom bought me tickets to see the Hip at the Stages once, and I wasn't of age, but I got in.
I was gonna say,
luckily,
still got in.
Luckily, I was 6 foot at the age of 16, and I still got in. Yeah. But it was just the right timing.
I want to hold on that point for a second because, yeah, you know, you mentioned timing here. I would think the exact opposite. The COVID-19 pandemic hit live music venues particularly hard, and many Canadian venues closed. And in the midst of all this, you make this gamble on a bar and live music venue in Kingston's most busiest downtown strip here. How has that paid off for you?
So luckily, we were just coming out of the COVID. And unfortunately, like I said, the place here before didn't pan out. And they kind of abandoned and off they went. I made a great deal with the owner of the building. We took it over in February of 2023. And then we opened in May. And we've been here rocking it for a year and a half. And we've got such a great following of people. And maybe it's because people know who I am and they want to support me. And I appreciate that greatly. Like, I grew up and born and raised here in Kingston. So I'd like to think I've made a lot of friends. And I don't treat people badly. And I've always been good to people. And my biggest thing as a musician was always, I don't care if you're the greatest musician in the world, if you walk off stage and you're an asshole, people are going to remember the asshole part. They're not going to remember the... So I always try and do both. Just be a good person. And just because to me, it's always just been my job, right?
Yeah.
I don't profess that I can go out and hang drywall, but I respect guys that can do that. I can play the guitar and I can sing and I can write songs, and that's what I do. It's always just been a job to me, so it's not about... There's no ego, there's no anything. It's just my job. So I've treated people well, and I think it's coming back to me now, and they've been good to me. So
you're
I appreciate everybody.
That. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you. I was just thinking about, you know, talking about Nashville and possibly going there and then being at home. We often hear that Kingston is like the Nashville of the North, you know,
because
it really is this beautiful place in Ontario, which is the most populous province. We're situated right in between Ottawa, Montreal, Toronto.
Absolutely.
We've had so many bands, you know, they say something in the water, whatever it is. Is there a little part of you that feels like, well, I got that Nashville right at home? A bit of the best of both worlds.
The biggest compliment for me and my wife, when anybody comes in here, any new guests that haven't been here yet, first words out of their mouths are, we were just in Nashville and this is exactly like that. And I said, well, then I did exactly what I set out to do. Nashville is always going to have a big place in my heart. But do I think I'm ever going to go back there and spend a great amount of time? Probably never again. But I feel like I've got that here now, so I don't have to drive 16 hours and do that, because we've got upstairs and downstairs. We've got two stages fully equipped, ready to go. I have an open mic every Sunday from 5 to 7. I'm just trying to keep live music going the best I can.
You mentioned that the opening of The Buckle was the culmination of many years of contemplation for you. And
yeah.
Tell us about your vision for The Buckle. Where did that idea start? And how do you articulate the kind of experience you were trying to bring to life here for your patrons?
Yeah, Lauren and I talked about it, like I said, for 10 years off and on. I just said, I was at the Brass Pub since the day it opened. I still hold the longest running house gig ever.
When you said I still, I was like, do you still sing?
No,
in
I
there?
Still don't sing there. No, no.
Okay.
but I was there for 20 years, every Sunday and Monday.
Yep.
And I built the live music there, or I like to think I did. I was the first one to play there. And, you know, I played with my buddies, Scott Rulo and Matt Hanlon and guys like that. And then Chris Koster would come up and play with us. And that's all when we were just kind of cutting our teeth and getting it going and, you know, playing live shows. So I was there for a while. And then, of course, in 2018, when I when that tragic Humboldt bus crash happened and I put that song out, I was out west a lot doing charity work and events and doing everything I could to help them. And then, of course, I came back to my seat being gone. So, but, it, wow. You know, fortunately, it ended up at 20 years, and that's great, and it's a great memories. And I've met most of the people that I know today from doing that gig. A little sad I didn't get a going away watch or anything.
Is that how the Senators thing came about? Because I know that you... Okay.
I met lots of friends, like Chelsea McDermott. Like, she's a great friend, and she's such a sweetheart. She called me up. I guess it's going on. This is my fourth year now with the Ottawa Senators. She called me up and said, hey, we have live music up here. You'd be perfect. And I said, okay. And at first I was like, what's that look like? Me playing at a hockey rink.
Yeah.
But I started doing it and I loved it.
Like, what does it look like?
Well, it looks like me lugging my gear up there.
Okay.
And driving the hour and 45 minutes. But I get to play in the Canadian Tire Center. You know,
like you were the in-game entertainment.
You can catch me. I was at Club Bell pregame, like from 5 till puck drop. Then I pack my stuff up and head on down to Burt's Bar, set up again, play between periods and after the game, and give it that. They knew that I was, like you said, it's like the brass thing. Mm-hmm. Give it that pubby atmosphere in a much, much bigger setting. They must have thought I was the right guy for that.
It's amazing how you've opened doors for musicians here at home. You know, you were just mentioning about the legacy that you've left at the Brass Pub down the road. And, you know, maybe you'll open some doors in Ottawa. Hey, Ottawa, Smitty, Jay, is just the beginning. There are more coming.
Yeah.
We're coming for your music scene.
Yeah, and I have a good Ottawa following also because I used to play down in the market at the Cabin every Saturday night, mm-hmm. and then Pub 101 down in the market. So I spent a lot of time in Ottawa. I made a lot of good fans.
Are you a Kingston advocate when you go to other markets like Ottawa or say Nashville? And I sense when you were talking earlier a bit of pride about, you know, having grown up in Kingston and experienced music in the way that you did at a young, impressionable age. But how does it make you feel, and do you take that message with you wherever you go?
I'm always telling people about bands for me. Like, I mean, I got a call from my friend Christian Tana from I Mother Earth about a month and a half ago, and he asked me, we're doing a show in Kingston, who would you recommend to open up? And I gave him a couple names of bands that I thought would be a great fit and that I truly believe deserve that sort of recognition, and I recommended The Wilderness, and they're opening up for
and
Mother Earth.
Luscious is too.
And Luscious is, yeah, Brielle is. So, I mean,
two amazing, awesome bands.
Yeah,
so good.
And the same goes for Abby Stewart and Alexa Goldie and all these kids, and Courtney Kane, all these kids that I try to help and mentor and write songs with and help when I can. And there's a new young lad named Lucas Oak, and he's up and coming. This kid's only 14, and he's only been playing for 6 months, and all I can say is watch out for this kid.
He's already been listed a few times on the Kingston Live website too. So
there you go.
Know,
yeah,
we're someone that we've started to pay attention.
He's out. So he comes every Sunday to open mic still, and he loves it. And he always asks me, he goes, "Is it too much? Should I stop coming?" I'm like, "No, man. this kid's gonna do great things if he can keep his feet down." And Matt Bazinet, who I have every Sunday night at 7:30, both of these guys, they each won the Country Singing Showdown at the Fall Fair this year. So
very cool.
Yeah,
you have to like appreciate the when you see the youth putting in the hard work, because we all know that the best of the best are the ones that get up there night after night after night, and they've put in the hours and the time. And, you know, Emily Fennell, Miss Emily, is one of those people.
Emily, of course.
And when we spoke with her on the Kingston Live podcast, she mentioned you and said, you know, one of the hardest working musicians in Kingston. Do you think that you've taken that hard work mentality from the stage into the bar here at the Buckle? Because running a bar can't be easy.
Yes. And you know what? And God love Emily. She's a great friend. And I love her like a sister. You can name probably five people on your hand who in this city have had a constant longevity, who yeah. just have been playing for so long in the city and doing that. And Emily, God love her, she won an awards, and she's just like, honestly, when I see stuff like that, it just makes me so proud to be friends with these guys and know that those are people that I play with. Those are people that I love and watch and admire.
You're talking about some of the most revered local musicians here, but I also know that you count some of Canada's most successful musical acts amongst your peers and your friends.
Absolutely.
Like Tragically Hip, who happen to also be local, but, you know, Blue Rodeo and, yep. and others. And what have those bands and artists kind of meant to you over the course of your career?
It's been so amazing. Like, sometimes I just sit there and go, wow, like, I'm so lucky to do this. But like I was saying earlier, it's always just been my job, so I just consider them buddies, and they're just like, they're doing the same job as me, but they're doing it at a different level, which, and some people are like, oh, are you jealous? No, I'm not jealous. I've made a career out of music for 37 years. I've never had to work another job in my life. Like, I mean, Basil Donovan from Blue Rodeo's played on my last three albums. Kelly Prescott, who's an amazing singer, songwriter, country artist, she sang on three of my albums. Yeah. Tragically Hip, like, we've had them play here. Geez, they played here three times already. Gordon, Rob, and Paul, and like Paul had his 60th birthday here and chose the Buckle to have his, that's a big birthday.
That's very cool.
You know, we blocked off the windows and had a giant two-floor bash here for him. And
you know, you're not the only working musician who's built their career in Kingston that we've talked to. And I wonder, as a young musician growing up in Kingston, I know you had your experience, but there are hundreds of other kids out there having their own experience right now. And does the same opportunity exist for them today? Is it different? If so, how, and what advice might you
give them? That is a fantastic question. So that would be full circle as to why I wanted to open this venue, is because I want to give every one of those kids, like a Lucas Oak or a Matt Bazinet, that opportunity. Because I know how hard it is to walk into a pub and go, hey, I'm really good, hire me. That doesn't work. I get probably 20, 30 emails a week of bands and artists that want to play. And I'd like to think to some degree, obviously as a professional musician my entire life, that I have a pretty good gauge on, okay, you're decent enough, let's give you a show, or you're not. But I also am a soft-hearted person where I don't have the heart to say, you're not so good, and I don't think this is going to work out. So I always say, hey, we got an open mic, come on out to that and build your chops. And you got to put in the time. Like, you can't just... But the age of the internet now has ruined a lot of things, mm-hmm. Where everybody thinks they're a star. Everybody wants to be a star. The days of 4-track recorders are in the dump. You can just grab mm-hmm. a good interface, computer, good condenser mic, and off you go.
I was going to say, sitting there recording like one song too, being able to edit is different than sitting down and playing a few sets for a few hours.
Absolutely.
You need vocal training, you know. If you play an instrument, you know what it takes to yeah. build those calluses or whatever
100%.
It may be, you know. It really is. It is that.
And unfortunately,
time.
I don't think kids these days get that part of it, because mm-hmm. they've grown up in that era of, I can TikTok this, or I can Facebook this, or I can just...
It's like a performance from the start, from the learning start. It's like, you know what I mean? Yeah.
So I joked yeah. to my wife there a couple weeks ago, because Sturgill Simpson just did it. He just released music under a different name, just for the sake of, because he's been screwed over so badly by the country music scene, that he said, you know what? Okay. Good music is good music. I don't care if you're 50 or you're 5 or you're 100. A good song is a good song, and it doesn't matter who's putting it out. Mm-hmm. So I joked to my wife. I said, you know what? I'm going to purposely write a commercial song, put it out, not under Jay Smith, not under Smitty. I'm just going to put some goofy name under it, and just no video, no picture, just the song, and see where it lands. Yeah. Just as an experiment, because that's where we're headed, and it kind of upsets me. Yeah,
it makes me wonder, where is live music important anymore? Is live performance important
anymore
as an
artist?
I believe so.
you have to get out and get booed. You have to get out and have people go, oh, God, get up and walk off their chair. You have to experience that in order to be a good musician, in my opinion. Live music is where it's at, and you really have to get out. You have to get in your van with four other people and just travel up and down the highway and play those bars. You have to do it. And if you don't, then it just to me, what's the point? Like, if you want to sit in your bedroom and make great music, and again, great music is great music, but if you don't know how to tour and you don't know how to get on stage and perform, you're not going to go far. You're not going to do well for very long. You might be a one-hit wonder, but then you're just going to get washed away. Mm-hmm. Guys that put in the hours last long.
There's a vibe, like music too, I feel like when you're playing, when you have a community that comes together, which you've provided as a musician and now as the owner of a business that brings people together. I was chatting with my musician friend, Emily, the other day.
I was chatting with my roommate.
Just about how powerful music is, because it really brings everyone together. Like when you're, think about you're performing a song and there's hundreds of people there. Everyone is hearing the same thing at the same time. A lot of them are singing along. It's a spiritual moment. You know 100%. What I'm saying?
And let's talk about Emily for a second. What was the other day at the Merchant? How many years was that?
Yeah, that I would.
Was it 20?
I was going to say it probably was 20.
The 20th anniversary of her doing her Fridays. Like she had the Fridays there at the Merchant. I had the brass every Sunday. People knew where to go.
I was going
to
say that's what, like, when I hear the brass, I think of you.
Like and honestly, when I think of the Merchant, I think of Emily.
Yeah.
And Emily is such a fantastic example of a musician just keeping it going and never, I know this, and you as well as you do, she's wanted to just say it. There's been times where it's, because it does, it gets frustrating when you get this in your face sometimes. And that story years ago with the whole Gene Simmons thing, I mean, I don't want to rehash that, but I'd never been so proud of her in my life.
Yeah.
A record. I'm not going to say what company.
Some context here to our listeners.
So we're just talking about like selling out.
Yeah. that's the bottom line is the sellout. And you know what she said? She's you.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the biggest rock star in the entire world.
Yeah.
And if people didn't take from that she's one of the greatest people on earth and one of the most amazing artists to do that, because most people, 99 out of 100 people would have said, where do I sign? And now look at her. She's been winning awards. She's stuck to her guns. She is who she is.
You have those moments. They mean so much more. Like even watching them rehearse for that show, Dan Curtis.
Yeah.
He's another local guy.
He's
like
a character.
Oh, he's such a character. But like, it's just like you fall right back into the remembering those songs.
Like I was watching people through like, lives and stuff. Man, it was just like, and Van Sheen and all those.
Beasts.
Like,
those guys are beasts.
I can name you 100 artists in this town that should be somewhere else. But they're here and they're still
awesome.
Doing great.
I think one of the questions we've been trying to answer since episode one, this is episode 74 now, is
that's incredible.
What is it about Kingston that, you know, why Kingston? Why that concentration of musical talent and passion?
Like Ann said earlier, we're right in the middle of Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa. Whether people are coming from other towns, like Emily's from the PEC, right? Like,
yep.
And stuff like that. But I don't know. We could stand here all day and just leave. I could rifle off 100 musicians that are absolutely, in my mind, huge and should be bigger than they are. But I don't know if it's something in the water or what it is, but Kingston is just could be the universities. It could be like Bedouin Sound Clash when they were here, like stuff like that. Like,
I think it's also the fact that we are supportive of musicians as well, and we've talked about that. We have programs like Joe's Mill, like a library full of instruments, you know.
Joe Chitlin, another legend in the city,
right?
Gone way too soon.
I get the sense that the Buckle is sort of your way to bring it all full circle and pay it forward a little bit.
Exactly. Like I was saying, I built two stages purposely. I have two rooms for that. I have open mic, and even if there's one person that shows up weekly or 15, I don't care. I'm going to keep that going. So if someone wants to come in and have a stage to play on, and you know, my buddy Justin Chenier came in the other day. That guy, he was terrified to do it, but he's been practicing at home and he's been messaging me, and I think he gave me a little excuse there a couple weeks ago with a sore throat. But he came in this Sunday and he got up and he did 3 or 4 songs and he was great.
That's
and
the that's, thing. There's some people that have so takes. Much talent, but they're like afraid to get up there, right?
That is the biggest. That is the biggest thing. I can name you 10 guys on my hand that are, I know are better than me, but they won't get out of their basement.
Mm-hmm.
They
just Justin, won't. If you're listening, the next time you play the Buckle, it will be packed house.
Yeah. No, it's true. There's so much talent out there, and there, it's one, you know, to be able to learn how to perform and get up there, and that's the importance of things like open mics that you have to allow people to get that time in, because I know myself as a performer, you can, you know, I can tell a joke and be as cool as I get at home, and then all of a sudden the bright lights are on you, and you're standing
and all of a sudden
stage,
that joke ain't as funny as it was at
laughing,
home.
And you're rushing through, and all of a sudden, you know, so you need that time to like, really.
That's a whole other thing, Angie. Yeah. That stand-up, like, that's what I make quite clear in my posts on Facebook and stuff, is that my open mic, anything goes.
Yeah.
Just get up and tell jokes, tell a story, tell me a poem, sing me a song. I don't care. Just keep your political and your religious beliefs to yourself, because that's not for open mic stage.
I feel like you've been providing a lot of wisdom to the younger generation here on today's podcast, but I wanted to talk about your other career, which is being a venue owner. Is there anything that's pleasantly surprised you that you didn't realize going in that you were going to enjoy more than... Or maybe you were just kind of unaware an aspect of running a venue.
So one of my biggest things that I've always just not cared for much is karaoke.
Oh, yeah.
But we have karaoke here every Friday, 9 o'clock till 12:30. And it fills up fast. Like, it fills fast. Now, the good and the bad. The good is, I've actually pulled 2 musicians from karaoke and now given them gigs, because I thought, wow, can this person ever sing? So I'll say, hey, can you play? Yeah, I play too. And I've had them and I've given them paid gigs. The bad is, you got to take the bad with the good.
Can my friend play too?
And but, some people love the bad, by the way.
You should really hear my daughter sing. She's amazing. Yeah. But karaoke, honestly, when we first started doing that, I was like to my wife, like, oh, like, I don't want to do this. Like, I love it now. Like, I love coming in on Friday nights, setting it up. And we have great hosts. Brady and his wife, Amy, they host it, and they're amazing. They're just about to have a baby. So Brady's going to take a little break, and they're all going to take a little quick break. But I'm pleasantly surprised week after week how much actual talent is out there that may not want to come to an open mic, but they'll sing along to a backing track, and they're just incredible singers. So
I also must say that I think it is very important that even if you can't sing, you sing. Even if you can't dance, you dance.
Exactly.
They're all expressions, right? So, like, most people don't get an opportunity to get on stage unless they're decent. So I think it's wonderful that you give karaoke, even if it's just a few hours
a
week.
And it's actually a live stage, and there's lighting, and there's monitors, and you get to feel like you're actually on stage
as a
musician.
I have friends who love it, and it's because they can't sing, but it's literally the only moment they will get to feel that.
The honest joy that I get out of watching people have joy while being on stage, it's incredible.
I love that.
But as far as owning the venue, there's been a lot of, like, when we first opened up, we had a giant flood in the basement, which led me to,
I remember that, it was a Homegrown Live weekend.
That would have been our first Homegrown Live right off the bat, and we had a giant flood and had to close for the week.
Oh, wow.
But that being said, that also forced me to make that decision where, well, what am I going to do with this basement now? So I fully renovated it and put another stage in and got it ready. And we're already booking into next November for private parties for the room.
When we went down there, I noticed the mirrors. You have line dancing down there?
We do line dancing every Sunday. Sundays are great. Like, Sundays 5 to 7, we have open mic. 6 to 7, we have free line dancing lessons in the basement. 7:30 to 10:30, we have a solo artist, Matt Bazinet, who is fantastic. This kid's going to be another one to watch. So in the back of me, gives me that proud dad moment where I feel like these kids that I'm helping nurture are going to do big things because I can see it in them.
I know that you've been mentoring musicians, quite a few of them. Corey Marks, for example, I believe. I'm imagining you're not going to every karaoke night in town, and picking them out from that. But how do you get involved in mentoring young?
So Corey's a great example. This kid has become pretty huge in my mind. I mean, he's done stuff with Mick Mars from Motley Crue, Ivan Moody from Five Finger Death Punch, Travis Tritt. He's done so much, and he's done great big shows. And he still, to this day, he'll text me and he'll say, "Hey, what's going on?" or whatever. And we'll shoot the shit. And any interview he does, he always mentions me and says, "I got my start with Smitty. Smitty got me going." And the way that started is kind of the same generic way that I do it now, but I own the venue. But then it was at the Brass, and they used to come. He used to go to RMC and play hockey. And he knew, like I knew when I was a kid, I played hockey. I'm like, I'm never going to be a professional hockey player. So let's do my second love and do music. Corey quit RMC or got kicked out. I don't remember what happened.
He left. We don't know.
But no, Corey, you know what? Corey is a true, Corey is one of those, I feel like Corey's bringing back that actual true outlaw kind of thing where, you know what? You, I'm going to do whatever I want to do.
Yeah.
And the music he does, because it's certainly not country, it's certainly not just rock, it's just music. But Corey, they used to come to the Brass all the time, and a few of his boys would say, "Hey, our boy can sing, like you should get him up, like let's and Corey is an incredible drummer. That's what he was before this. So I got him up a few times, and I think the first song he ever did was "Traveling Soldier" by the Dixie Chicks, and I kind of stood to the side and I'm like, okay. And we're talking, this guy's got hair just for days, and he's up there singing a Dixie Chick song. So he looks at me, and I go, "That's great." And he goes, "Can I do another one?" So I said, "Yeah, keep going." So he did two or three, and then that just progressed to each week he'd come in and I'd let him get up on my stage and do his thing. And then all of a sudden he's not at RMC anymore, and then he moves back to North Bay, I guess. And then we're talking back and forth, and next thing I know he's doing a song with Travis Tritt and Mick Mars and Ivan Moody, and this song is like 250 million streams, and he's got a gold album. I'm like, I felt another proud dad moment. I'm like, wow, like this is great. But that's, again, that's what I'm trying to do. Like, I got no ego in this game. It's just, music is just music to me, and I love everything about music. People always ask me in interviews, like, "What do you love about the music business?" Well, I love the music.
Yeah.
I hate the business.
Like, yeah.
The music business is one of the hardest businesses ever to do anything.
There's so many aspects and elements of it, and I feel like in today's world there are so many people taking on different elements of it where they didn't before. Like, you know, an agent would do all of these things, and now they're setting things up and doing graphic design, and you know, like there's a lot of moving parts. It almost takes away from giving the artist the time to make the music.
Well, who was I listening to the other day? Kid Rock and Theo Von on a podcast. Mm-hmm. And Kid Rock was saying, well, they can take my voice now and put a whole album out with me ever never being there. That's a scary moment to think about. AI can write a song for Kid Rock, use Kid Rock's voice, release that song. And Kid Rock's like, yeah, but when it comes to performing it live, who's going to do that?
That answers the question that we posed earlier, the importance of live music.
100%. Mm-hmm. My friends went to Taylor Swift the other day. I said, how many songs do you think she actually sang? She's like, well, there was one song that she was bent over signing an autograph and it was still going. I'm like, point in case. I said, but how do you expect anybody for 3 hours to run around on a stage and sing without losing their breath? And it's
night
impossible.
After night after
as
night.
As a singer, I know you cannot do that.
On this topic, you're not just a performing musician yourself, but you're also a recording musician. And I think you've even had songs that have charted.
Yeah, I wrote one about my wife called Perfect 10. I like to call it my get out of jail free card. But yeah, that song, it was one of those things where it was on iTunes country charts for 6 weeks at like number two, number four, never got to number one, and that's fine. But people are like, well, that's great. What do you get out of that? Well, you don't get anything out of that. But I still get to say, hey, I was ahead of Luke Combs for a week, or I was,
you know what I mean? That's pretty amazing.
It's bragging rights, but again, it's, That stuff doesn't mean anything to me, but it makes me feel good that a song I wrote myself. I've never ever done a co-write and released a song with a co-write. It's always just been my songs, and I just put them out and go record them. But I've had the pleasure of working with people like Basil Donham and Derek Downham, Kelly Prescott, and just great people. And then, you know, Stick Outside the Door, of course, did its own thing. But on that note, that song was never mine. I wrote it. I put my phone down, did a one-take video, posted it on my personal Facebook page. And people are always like, well, why didn't you put it on YouTube or this and that? I said, because it was just something I had to get out of me. But within 8 hours, it got 2.2 million views and 55,000 shares and stuff like that. But a song like that, like, I gave that song to the Humble Broncos. It's not my song. Like, it's theirs. And any revenue from that was ever made was given to them. But yeah, like, Perfect 10, it did well. I've had a few songs that have done well, but...
Could we play one of them?
Yeah.
Do you want to pick one?
You can play that one if you like.
Yeah.
Or, actually, our mutual friend Jody Decker, I had a song, I called it Nervous, because it was a song about me and my insecurities and how I feel about stuff. And they're like, well, don't call it Nervous. That's not a very good title to put out there for a song. So we called it Butterflies. I said, well, how the hell is Butterflies better than Nervous? But it was essentially, again, about my wife's pretty much, you know...
She's a bit of a muse. We got it.
No. A muse, yeah. That's kind of the word I was looking for. And it's, yeah, so it's... The one verse is, corner me, I get nervous. Neither one of us deserve this. And do I still give her butterflies and stuff? So it seemed like a more appropriate title. So, but I released that one. Actually, you can play that one. I really like that song.
All right. Let's
give it a spin.
I think it's gone too far. Looks like we wrecked it beyond fixing. I don't know what to do or how to fight for me and you. Ain't the first time, but it's the worst time. Corner me, I get nervous. Neither one of us deserve this. Somehow life don't turn out like it should. So I'm counting on my mind to remember better times when I gave you butterflies. All I did was make you smile. Do you believe in true love, in a God up above? Well, I do. Don't you ever think I'll give up on me and you? Times I've sat and cried in the dark like a child. That's who I am. You may not understand, but the way you pulled in my heartstrings, you became my everything, and that scared me. So I ran. Corner me, I get nervous. Neither one of us deserve this. Somehow life don't turn out like it should. So I'm counting on my mind to remember better times when I gave you butterflies. All I did was make you smile. Do you believe in true love, in a God up above? Well, I do. Don't you ever think I'll give up on me and you?
This episode of Kingston Live is brought to you by Grand Onstage. Grand Onstage takes you beyond the regular Kingston Grand Theater experience. It's a subscription option that gives you access to pre-sale tickets, the best prices, and the best seats. That means you can customize your own individual package starting at just 4 performances. Want to bring friends? Subscriber pricing applies to their tickets too. And if your plans change, just exchange your tickets for another performance. Tickets for individual performances and subscriptions for the Grand Onstage season are on sale now at kingstongrand.ca.
I sense that there's been some level of personal transformation. Like, from the outside looking in, for years you were known as Smitty, right?
Yep.
And, you know, the musician for hire. Yeah, have you been trying to distance yourself from that persona now that you are a venue owner, or now that you've reached a certain stage of your life, or...
Another great question. So the way I explain it to everybody is, when I'm standing on this floor here, which I'm pointing to is the Buckle floor, or even at home or in my truck, I'm Jay. I'm Jay Smith. As soon as my feet hit the stage, I'm Smitty. I'd like to say Smitty died 13 years ago when I got sober. So Smitty was the guy that everybody knew and partied and was an animal and just was that stereotypical musician that just had a good time and was just drinking all the time and partying and doing stuff like that. But again, my wife, she saved my life. I have reevaluated my life and got sober and clean. I'd have none of this if it wasn't for my wife and my kids and me getting sober. So yeah, so Smitty to me is kind of not anymore. I tried to do the Smitty Kingston thing, and then it was like, I had an Instagram page that had 7,500 followers within less than a year under Smitty Kingston, and I just canceled it. I didn't change the name. I just canceled it. Took away all of that stuff. So yeah, I think I'm just Jay. Jay now is fine by me.
Well, it's interesting because we were talking earlier about different songs that reached on the charts and different things like that. And I've spoken to different musicians over the time about success and what success means to them. And of all of the things we talked about, I think being sober, having a loving family, opening a venue, like, that is the success. Like,
100%.
You know, really, I think success is whatever it means to you. But as I see it, great job.
Thank you, Angie. Yeah, and that's how I feel too, is that everything I've done up till now, whether it be good, bad, or real ugly, has led me to where I am right now. Mm-hmm. I'm a better person now, like anybody. Any drunk or person that did drugs in the past or anything like that, you do shitty things to people and you feel real bad about it, but you make up for it. And I think I've, in 13 years, I've made up for everything that I've done. And maybe me offering up my stage all the time to anybody and everybody is my way of saying thanks for not giving up on me and just sticking behind me and still being my friends and knowing that there was always a good person in there. And like, I've always been a good person, I think. That's the way my mother raised me, God rest her soul, wherever she is. But I'm better for being sober, for sure.
Your mom was someone important to you, yeah?
Oh, my mom was the greatest person.
Got some songs inspired by her.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. My stepdad died 16 years ago, who was the love of my mom's life. Sorry, Dad. That's facts, though. He passed away at a very early age. And then my mom just passed away 2 years ago. I still haven't and cannot write a song about either one of them. Maybe someday.
You know, not only are you a busy working musician and live music venue owner, you're also a dad. I'm a dad too, and I find it tremendously hard to balance things most of the time. How are you balancing things?
I'm a dad to two teenage girls, so
oh, geez.
It makes it triply hard.
And I've got
an older daughter from from when I was younger. Again, I was in high school and had a baby.
Yeah, I've got a 27-year-old too.
Yeah, I had.
Yes, Rob, my kid is 27. Do not look at me like that.
No, it's all right. That was a.
I know. It's. I know. I look 27. It's fine. Back to Jay.
Yeah. So
it's different, though, right?
It's being the dad of girls, hard. to begin with.
Yeah, I would imagine they would think you were like the coolest dad ever. I don't know.
I would like to think that they do.
It's like, that's what I imagine too.
That's exactly what I imagine.
And again, I wrote another song for my wife and my girls. It's called She Knows Best, which basically, and I always intro it with, if my girls grew up to be half the woman my wife is, then they're going to be just fine. My one daughter's going to be 17 in February. The other one's 13. They're both very musical and just incredible voices. And my youngest daughter plays piano, guitar, ukulele. She sings incredibly. My older daughter, she sings amazingly, plays guitar. And they look up to like artists like Tennille Towns and Taylor Swift and Tate McRae and Megan Maroney. And I sometimes find myself sitting outside their bed because they each have their own separate end of the house, and my wife and I live at the other end of the house, and one of them will be playing piano and singing, the other one will be playing guitar and singing. They don't know I'm out there, but I'll stand there and listen and just tear up. My oldest daughter, she's, I hate to say the number, but I do have grandkids, but she's off doing her own thing. She's been married for a few years, and my grandson calls me the big truck. Yeah. He's like, what's the big truck doing?
Yeah. And you know, I sense a lot of what you're doing, even with the buckle, is about, you know, I mentioned paying it forward and about, you know, creating a safe space for the next generation and for people who are here today to experience live music in a setting like this. And, you know, considering, you know, the world that we live in and kids and youth, as we've been talking about here, what's sort of your greatest hope for them, you know, maybe for your kids in particular?
Wow. Honestly, I just want my girls to it comes back to my mom, is that the way my mom raised me, I just, if you can help somebody, help them. If you can do something for somebody, do something for somebody. Even as simple as like my buddy Kevin Head, fantastic Kinks musician, long timer, he's out in Gann. I did a show in the summer for him with my buddies Outskirts, the Blue Rodeo tribute band, Jeff Callery and Randy Orr and those guys. Got done the show, and Kevin had already sent me my pay, and he messaged me about 2 weeks later. He goes, there was a bit more in the budget, and I owe you this and that. And I said, I just messaged Kevin. I said, just pay it forward to the next guy. I don't need that. So it's just, yeah, for me, I was just happy to get, because I had been off for the whole year trying to run this place and get this place going. I was just happy to be back out playing. So the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't care. Like, I don't need the money. I just said, pay it forward. But that's how I raise my girls. That's how Lauren and I raise our kids. They both go to Catholic school. We instill that in them from my mother. You know, she believed in her God, and I may not necessarily have believed in what she believed in, but we teach our girls to just help when you can, do what you can. And going back to what we were talking about earlier, you couldn't go downtown without seeing live music. And now I feel like that's not the fact anymore. Honestly, on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like every day of the week, there was live music to go to. And I mean, incredible bands. So I'm trying to do my little part. And that's what I want my kids to. Hopefully my girls will want to take this place over someday. But if they don't, then that's fine too. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to push the buckle on them. If they don't want to do it, they don't want to do it. Then I guess that will just, hopefully I can pass it on or sell it to somebody else that would want to, because obviously I'm not going to be here forever. I'm not 25 anymore. But I'm also not 90. So I'm going to do this for as long as I can.
You're not a 25-year-old grandfather?
No. I was
a, just wanted to get that straight.
You're not a 27-year-old grandmother?
Shut your mouth. Moving right along.
Are you feeling more optimistic about Kingston now, though? You know, you opened the buckle on the, you know, the tail end of the pandemic.
Yeah.
You know, you had a flood on your opening weekend.
Very first opening weekend.
but you know, those were the days not so long ago before there was a music strategy here in Kingston, before there was a music office.
Yeah.
Kingston, do those developments, you know, give you hope that, you know, maybe Kingston's musical glory days aren't in the rearview mirror, but ahead?
I truly think that Kingston is back and up and coming with, like, I mean, the Broom Factory's doing great shows. The Toucan still runs live music. The Merchant runs live music. Unfortunately, Blue Martini's gone, who, in my opinion, had the biggest and one of the better stages in town with a big dance floor and all that, a great setup. And most people are probably thinking right now, why is he talking about other venues and promoting it? Well, because there's enough room downtown for everybody, and it's just about the live music, is that as long as all those venues stay to it and keep it going, like the Brass or like the Ale House, the Royal, all these guys are still doing live music and trying it. Daft has live music once in a while. What's the one out in the West End there, the brewery? Spearhead.
Yep.
Spearhead. They do music. Like, Rax doesn't do it as much as they used to. But, I mean, there's still lots of venue. Overtime, Robert Overtime does all kinds of music. That guy does all every genre you can think of. Mm-hmm. I think he had the Insane Clown Posse there a few years ago.
What?
Yeah, for real. But, I mean, like, Rob does what he can. But all the venues I've mentioned are all venues that have given me a shot when I was younger and let me play there and do my thing. So I wish them all the greatest things and best things to come, and I hope they do keep it up. The Caesar Company does live music once in a while. Yeah. John gave me an opportunity a few years ago. I was playing there on Sundays. So when I lost my gig up the street on Sundays, John Bronze at the Caesar gave me Sundays. So I started doing that again. But then when I opened this, it was like, well, I'm going to start playing Sundays at my own venue. Why would I give that business to somebody else? So I started doing that, but John still does it. And he's got my buddy Danny DeRue from Ambush playing there on Sundays, which is great. But yeah, like Dave at the Merchant, like all those places just need to, I know it's hard. As getting back to your question earlier, yeah, as a business owner, it is hard. And I do live music four nights a week, sometimes twice a day, and it's expensive. And I don't charge cover charge. I don't raise my drink prices. I don't do any of that. So for me to swallow some of that, and sometimes, you know, it gets a little heated with conversations when you're with musicians that want to play here, that really want to play here. I have my formula and it works for me. Obviously some musicians will walk away and go, oh, he doesn't pay there. Well, I pay what I can pay. I also supply all of the backline. I went to great expense to outfit the stage where musicians just have to walk in and plug in. I have all the backline. Amps, drums, everything, sound system, lighting. I just hope that I hope the music, like the Broom Factory, is they do music all the time, and the Spire, and I mean I could go on.
There's so much live music. There is around here.
There's all kinds of it.
You are right in the epicenter of all of it, and it seems like,
and attached to the Grand Theater.
Yeah, that's
who does the live music all the time.
Is there a secret door into there? From here?
I don't know. It's right there, but it's been it's been bricked up.
I knew it. Despite all, you know, the abundance of live music venues in this, it seems like there was still room for one more. There's still room for the Buckle, and there's still probably room for even more. You got the Royal Tavern next door here that is still going.
Yeah, they just changed ownership too, I think, again. But again, that's one of those things where I'm so glad that somebody else went in and bought the Royal, because it's the oldest pub in Canada. Right. And it for it to close would be a heartbreaking thing. Like, so, and yes, but on the Royal topic, they used to do that Royal Jam every Thursday. Yep. Well, they don't do that anymore, and the Blue Martini's closed, so the Buckle's going to do something of that nature.
Oh, cool. I wanted to ask, I'm embarrassed to admit, and this is your first time?
I'm not embarrassed to admit anything. What?
I'm embarrassed to admit that this is my first time being in the Buckle.
Oh, it's not mine. Jay can attest to that. I've walked in here, I've supported, I've drank, I've eaten, I've done it all.
Absolutely.
But I haven't done open mic yet, so maybe we'll get on that.
I can't wait for that.
We'll talk later.
Oh, yeah. Jokes. All jokes.
No, for real. I'm going to get on that kit in a minute. Okay. What were you saying, Rob?
Oh, For our listeners who have not visited the Buckle yet, have not taken in some live music, give them a good reason to come down for the first time.
Yes, so Wednesday to Sunday, 4 o'clock, open. Wednesday night, we've had the same duo, a husband and wife, well, soon to be husband and wife. I hope I can say that. Yeah, Mike Grice and Amanda Sorensen, they're engaged, they're getting married, but they're an actual duo. Mm-hmm. And we've had them every Wednesday since the day we opened. I've played with Mike since I was probably 20 years old, and their duo is fantastic. It's called Whiskey Smoke. They're here every Wednesday, 7:30 to 10:30. Thursday nights, my band, when I'm in town, we play. We're called Trailer Swift.
Love it.
And we hit.
Where'd that come from? I don't get it.
We hit the stage at 8 o'clock, and we're an all request band, so no set list, no nothing like that. Nice. Just seat to your pants. Friday nights, of course, every Friday is Buckle Karaoke, 9 o'clock for all of you to come out and do your thing and show us what you got, Ange.
No, I'm open micing it.
And then Saturdays, we're going to start probably either Saturdays or Fridays. I'm going to start like with a matinee, like a dinner kind of show. We did that in the past, like with John McClurg and Al Duquette kind of thing, and just have them play music during dinner, like a 5 to 7 kind of thing. So either Friday or Saturday we're going to do that. But then Saturday nights we have full band night, like that's just rotating local and out of town bands. always 9 o'clock start. Sundays is a busy day. 5 to 7, we have open mic. Ange.
Yeah, that's me. Okay, that's thank you.
Okay, five to seven on Sundays. Coming. Open mic, and again, tell jokes, sing.
Oh, no, I'm
sing a song. Give me a poem, whatever.
The kit set up at that
the
point.
The kit can be set up for you on perfect. Sunday if you want.
I'll sing while I play.
I will bring the snare drum up, and you can just have at it.
Amazing.
Free line dancing lessons downstairs, six to seven. You get to see the buckle down, and then 7:30 to 10:30, we have Matt Bazinet playing solo. So just live music.
One of the busiest places in town.
Like, we're just trying to have live music.
Food and drink.
We just put the new menu out on Friday.
Yep.
All of our menu items are under $20. That was another one of Lorna and I's goal. Because as a family of four, we go out. I was getting sick and tired of seeing a $160 bill for a family of four to have mediocre food. So Lorna and I, like, we have a $40,000 brick pizza oven and all the fixings back there. We make our own dough, we do all that in-house, we press our own burgers, we do all that stuff, and everything's under $20, and our beverages probably under price of anyone. You know, we have our happy hours, we have all that, but yeah, that was the goal. I just want to get people in the door. It's not about profit for me, it's about providing that live music venue and giving people a place to go where it's not going to cost them arm and leg. There's no cover charge ever. The food's under $20. The drinks are...
I think one thing we all crave is community, and you've built a community.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's fair to say that. It's very cool, too, that you have the completely separate, but, you know, it's the same, but, like, a venue underneath, so you can keep the vibe going up here and then have private events downstairs as well.
Well, one of the best nights ever was we had a private party downstairs. It was a Saturday night, and so the door was closed off, and then the private people came in the back door and just down the back stairs, and they had the downstairs room. I had Rob Baker, Gord Sinclair, and Paul Langlois on the stage playing Bob Cajun or whatever they were playing hip songs.
Hip playing the hip.
But then I had a bunch of young lads up here playing from out of town, Ryan Zig and the Zags. Great young band. Had them playing on the stage, and they were up here the whole night playing. And then at the end of the night, the drummer says to me, he goes, did I just see the hip leaving your building? I said, yep, absolutely. And I go, they were playing downstairs while you guys were playing up here. So they were like, we just played in the same place as the Jazz.
That's
like,
sound yes.
Well, I mean, as a musician, I tried to go to great lengths to try and make both venues, so you could separate them and we could have them both going at the same time.
Where can our listeners find and follow you online?
So you can, the Buckle Kingston on Facebook and Instagram. That's your best bet to find anything that we're doing online.
Aside from the listings on KingstonLive.ca, which our listeners
besides are about. The listings on KingstonLive.ca, which I'm going to be a big promoter of from here on in. Yeah, because like I told you earlier, our website is and I'm working on it. I'm learning. I'm one of those guys.
Your bar and live music venue is absolutely not. So that's the important thing.
So don't judge.
Two out of three, bad Jay.
Do not judge the Buckle by its website. I'm working on it. But yeah, if you want to know anything that's going on, I try and update daily on Facebook. I mean, we've got almost 6,000 followers on there, which is incredible to me.
Yeah.
In just under a year and a half. So yeah, you can follow us on there. It's all at Kingston, at the Buckle Kingston.
Well, if you have not been to the Buckle, strongly encourage you to get down here at some point. You now know what's going on. Find the listings at kingstonlive.ca. Jay, thanks so much for having us here.
And if there's aspiring bands, musicians out there that want to play here, you can email me personally at jsmithband@gmail.com. It'll be me responding, and that's who you'll be talking to, so I hope to hear from you.
We'll put all this in the show notes as well for our listeners to check out.
Thank you.
Yeah. Man, this has been a great conversation.
It's been wicked.
Thank you for drinking, what is that, juice? Well,
that is that's an energy drink that I won't name because they didn't pay us to be on here, so tough.
Oh, there we go.
I will just say that this is my first interview with Kingston Live while drinking a pint. Cheers.
Hopefully not the last.
This has been Kingston Live. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please share it, tell a friend, or subscribe on your platform of choice. For show listings, artist info, and all things Kingston music, check out kingstonlive.ca. Kingston Live was produced in Kingston by Soundwise. Hosted by Rob Howard and Ange Stever. Voiceovers and technical production by John Sanfilippo. Writing and research by Peter Sanfilippo. Executive producer Rob Howard. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at podcast@kingstonlive.ca.
CFRC's annual funding drive campaign is now underway through December 31st. Help us raise $25,000 to support our local arts and artists and keep our community informed with local news, concerts, and events listings on air and on our website. Visit CFRC.ca today and make your gift to Kingston's longest-running broadcaster serving our community since 1922. Get a tax receipt via Queen's University or get sweet CFRC swag and enter to win our weekly raffle draws featuring gifts from amazing local donors. For every $5 donated, you get one more chance to win. Thank you for your support.
Oh, waiter.
Yes, I'd like a bowl of hot alphabet soup.
Hi, my name is Hayden, and I have a new show on CFRC called Alphabet Soup.
A bowl of hot?
Make sure it's hot.
Alphabet Soup is a musical variety show that's live every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m.
Make sure it's hot.
Right.
Okay, sir. Coming right up.
Tune in to hear something classic or something fresh. Tuesdays at 10 a.m. on CFRC.
Hey, Charlie, table 26 wants a hot alphabet soup.
Communication is everywhere, but what is it? Communication is how you share your thoughts, your opinions, your culture, from what you see on TV to what you post online. But what about the people who are not being seen or heard? AMI is a media company that strives to be a voice for Canadians.